Welcome everyone to another episode of the Army and Time Podcast. Last week I was out. I was training in Arizona for quite a bit. So there was no episode. But this week, we're right back to it. And we're jumping right in with an interview. So this week we have Ben from Risk of Today. How you doing, Ben?
Yeah, good evening, Alex. Thanks for having me on.
Cool, man. I'm excited. I'm excited because I think everyone that I have had is U.S. based, and except Rico. I talked to Rico from Rico's Watches podcast from Canada. So, But he's on the law enforcement side. So from the military side, you're the first one that is outside the U.S.
Fantastic. Well, it's an honor to be the first UK-based watch collector to be actually on the podcast. That's brilliant.
Yeah, for sure.
First time for everything.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit, man. What got you into watches, man? What do you do? What tell us a little bit about you.
So my day job is I am what's known as a tactical submariner. So I work within the Royal Navy Submarine Service, and my job is to basically work in a control room of a submarine.
Nice.
So if you imagine the submarine as an animal and it has a brain, and the brain synapses and the information that flows through those and goes to all the important decision-making parts. So that's exactly what we do. We are the sort of information supplier to the officer of the watch or the captain that runs the submarine, essentially. So as a tactical submariner, I will operate the combat system, take information from all kind of different sensors that you'd find on a submarine, so radar, that's sonar, also visual stuff and stuff like that. And we paint a picture that the captain or the officer of the watch can actually understand. So the threat that's out there, the enemies, what we're looking at, what's in area, what are we expecting? Or if it's just civilian kind of cruise ships or container ships, like where are they going? Are they on a shipping lane? Are they, how fast are they going? What course are they on? It's our job to paint this tactical picture that the higher ups, the grown-ups, can understand. So that's our job. I've done 6 years full-time service now. Before that, I was a reservist for 2.5 years, which is the equivalent of your National Guard. And I transferred across to be a full-time submariner. So I've done 3 major deployments now on primarily Vanguard class submarines. I won't disclose which ones,
but
so the Vanguard class, what makes the Vanguard class submarine unique partially unique in terms of its capability is that it is the sole deliverer of the Trident nuclear weapons deterrent for the UK. So traditionally in the Cold War, where those weapons were delivered by, say, US-based bombers with nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles based in Kent, stuff like that, this day and age, it is up to the Royal Navy and the Royal Navy Submarine Service singly to provide that nuclear deterrent 24/7, 365 days a year. There is a Vanguard class submarine out there in the ocean somewhere providing it. So these patrols are very long. We crew with roughly between 100 to 150 people at any one time, so it gets very close. It's a close-knit working environment. And you know, the Royal Navy Submarine Service has had its own culture from the Second World War. We still use words and we still wear uniforms that our grandfathers and great grandfathers wore and did. So it is very interesting culture, and watches are a part of it. So I got into watches way before I actually joined the Navy. It was also almost strange. I had a fossil watch as was my first watch when I was 18, and never really thought much of it. It was only much, much later, when I was about 20, that I took it to a market in a Lancashire mill town. If you can imagine all the dark, dusty roads with all the like chimneys. It's not like Peaky Blinders at all. It's like, but I took this fossil watch to the market, and I was just like, well, the strap's wearing out. I'm going to change the strap. And then I ended up putting it on a rubber diver strap, and it matched the watch. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. Like, why didn't I think of this before? And then and then came the venerable Casio F91.
That
changed everything. That changed my perception of watches completely. And I love that it was the Casio F91 that did that. Literally like £8 or whatever it was on Amazon at the time, maybe £6. Ordered it, and it lasted forever. I haven't got it anymore, sadly. It died a death long ago in the field, but it was the watch that started it all. It showed how watches could be this, you know, vessel for other things like experiences, like history, all kinds of things. So, I mean, the F91 itself is synonymous with, like, you know, the war on terror and bomb making and stuff like that. And the CIA used to look for people who wore F91s, that kind of history. And I was like, well, there's a link there. There's a link between history and there's a link between these watches. And that is also what started it. So that's what got me really interested. But when I joined the military, watches quickly took on a whole different sphere and meaning. I mean, one of the first field exercises that I used to do when I first joined the Naval Reserves, because I was kind of like warfare, infantry, Naval Reserves before I went to be a submariner. The watch I always wore in the field was a Timex Camper, which is a watch I can't really find anymore. I'm looking on eBay and online and everything, and I just can't find an Indiglo 42mm Camper anymore. They're just gone. No idea what's happened to them.
Yeah.
But I used to wear one of those, and it was a great watch. And then that got me interested in, well, what's the story behind this design? Like, what is this fabric strap, 24-hour dial kind of plastic lightweight watch? And it turned out that there was a history with the Vietnam War, and these watches were designed in a certain way to be disposable, but also they had a massive meaning and a massive history to veterans of the Vietnam War, and that got me really interested in it. And it carries on to the modern day in several different interpretations of the same. Every single watch I own, every single watch that I've seen being used in the submarine service has its own story. And I should explain, just to put it out there, because I know I haven't mentioned this to you, Alex, but in my articles that I've written for Recon Team Watch Block, is run by Justin. I've talked about at length the watches and how they relate to submarine and submariner culture, because they do. Watches feature heavily in who people are as rank, or what job they do, or the kit that we actually use day to day. The watches feature heavily in that. And watches have their own deeper appreciation on submarines than they do on surface ships. You'll know a submariner because they'll stand next to you, and if you've got a good watch on, they will notice and they'll go, it's a nice Planet Ocean, or that's a nice submariner, like I like that, like I've got one of those. And they're all like that. In the submarine service in the UK, submariners all get paid quite substantially more than the standard say able rate in terms of the surface fleet or any other branch of the military. In fact, if you were to compare an able rate first class submariner to their kind of lance corporal equivalent in the army, they actually earn nearly twice as much, simply because of the danger pay and everything else. Yeah. And in natural true fashion to every 22-year-old idiot in the world, they spend it on watches, and it's just part of it, which is where they come from. But these watches come in various different interpretations, various different histories, and it is a very interesting, vibrant culture that these watches find themselves in. So,
nice, man. That's pretty cool. You know, so for us, we have, because I know you say you're part of the reserves, right? For us, we have the reserves and the National Guard.
Mm-hmm, right.
So the National Guard is the state one. It belongs to each state, because then you know we kind of broke down into each state has their own area. Then the reserve is the one that belongs to the federal government. So that's how we divide it. But that's pretty cool, man, that you know for us, I think we don't, I don't know, and I will have to refer refer back to Jason. He's the Navy expert from Watch Rolling, but I don't know if they make the submariners make twice as much. I know they make more money because we do the danger pay, hazard duty pay, which is what we call, and so on and so on. We tack on a couple of things depending on the job that you do, and then while you deploy or your own movement on patrol for submariners, they get paid more also. I think, depending on, like, for us in the Army, our different jobs get paid for hazard duty while they're deployed also. So I don't know if it's exactly as much as half or double. So I will have to refer to Jason. I know Jason will listen to this and he will tell me. So
it is quite substantially more. And the fact is, when it gets to senior ranks like chiefs and chief petty officers and stuff, the money starts rolling in from that accumulated days you've spent at sea and long separation allowance. And very often it goes, you can tell the difference between a junior petty officer and a senior chief petty officer because they'll have a really good watch on. So that's usually what people spend it on, if not other things like cars and women's a big one as well.
For us is a joke. Like you know, the new military members, because at least in the Army, they all have the new soldiers have brand new Camaros or brand new
calendars. I knew that was coming because it's such a meme.
and to
be honest, I'm sure the American listeners would love to hear, but it's exactly the same over here. But it's not Camaros. It's not Camaros. It's stuff like Golf GTIs and BMW 4 Series and stuff like that. People turn up in like 3-liter diesel Mercedes. I'm just like, mate, you don't even own a house. Like, are you living in the boot or what? Like, it's mad. An ex-lad of mine who I trained, he was 20 years old, one of the funniest guys I ever knew, Scouser from Liverpool, and he after his first patrol, he went out and bought a Ford Cougar. Now, I don't know if this is a car that exists in the US, but it's basically like it's a little Ford Explorer, basically. It's a mum's car for taking the kids to go and play football or soccer on a Monday morning, on a Sunday afternoon or whatever. Yeah. And it was paying like something through the nose, like 15% interest on it, £500 a month on it. And it was on like basic wage. I was like, what are you doing? And it was just like, oh, mate, I want to put something, I can get the fishing gear in the back on the weekends. I'm just like, it's not a good enough reason. Yeah. It's exactly the same. It's just great to hear that that's just a standard across the board.
It's exactly the same over here, man. I think one of the biggest groups of military people for us, they're very big into watches, are probably the Submariners. It's one of those things that I guess, you know, it comes with the brutality, I guess, or I should say that it is being a Submariner, because that is a hard thing. Like, I don't know. So I spent a little bit of my career with special operations. So I boarded a couple of ships and my mentality was always, I don't understand, how can you live in this little bitty bunk that everything for you is right there? And depending on the ship, you might hot swap with somebody. I'm like, I don't understand how is that possible. Like, I don't want to do that. Like, that you gotta like it.
Imagine that experience, but 50% less in terms of space.
Yeah.
And especially as a junior Submariner, 50% in terms of bunk availability.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it's like. So on a submarine, Your rack, as we call it, your bed, is one of maybe 18 in that space. So you have eight on one side and eight on the other. I'll say nine on one side, nine on the other.
Yeah.
And so this bed is very small. It's about the size of a coffin, basically. And when you close that curtain across, once you're in there, that is the only private space that you get anywhere on the submarine, unless you're in one of the traps in the toilets with the door shut.
Yeah.
And that's the only private space that you get. Your entire world for up to 4.5-5 months at a time is to walk along a corridor, the toilets, the heads to your right, and you go further down, you go for a bulkhead through an airlock, and then you're towards the more comfortable part of the submarine. On the right is the galley where your food's cooked. The door after that is the mess, the junior rates mess in this case. And that's where you eat all your meals. That's where you drink all your hot drinks. That's where you watch American Pie while you're on watch, avoiding the chief trying to job you off, trying to make you do something. And you go up the ladder, you go towards the control room. You go in the control room, and that's where you work. That's where all your kit is. That's where all the work you do is. That's where all your responsibility is. And if you walk back down that ladder, down the corridor, past those compartments, that is your entire life. Your entire life can be broken down into two levels of basically what is it? To most civvies and people in a mental terms, in a building. It's a couple of floors, and that is your entire life for hundreds of days at a time. The only thing that might be different between each day is A, what's happening outside the submarine. There may be different challenges. There might be different threats out there.
Yeah.
It might be really shit weather, and you might be rolling from side to side, and that's just ruined everything. You can't use the gym on board a submarine when the weather is really bad.
So exactly.
Your fitness routine ruined. Or you come down and somebody remembers a different story from another time that they've just remembered to tell you, and it's like the funniest thing, and it would make your entire week. And that's the relationship that these guys have with each other. And to have that mental resilience to kind of accept that and perform that task is massive, because that's the thing that pulls people apart from the people who kind of can say, yeah, I want to do this as a career, or I've done it once, fuck that, I'm not doing it again. But the rewards are there for those who want to. So from people who work on surface ships, where I remember I was talking to a leading hand, so Killick, we call him a Killick. Killick leading hand, corporal, whatever you want to call it, a weapons engineer who had served on board carriers recently. And he was kind of like, I could never go on a submarine, because when the football's on, I want to go in the mess, have a can of Stella with Sky Sports on or whatever, and I want to watch that. It's all there. It's all free. None of that on a submarine.
Yeah.
The benefit is that because there's a nuclear reactor on board, we don't have to stay on board. We can go inboard and go and live in cabins. So we call them cabins, or kind of rooms. They're really, really good. The accommodation's really, really good. So that's the benefit. You get to go off the boat where your manager can't find you, or the guys who are looking to give you a job don't know where you are. And then they have to put you on WhatsApp and say, like, mate, you need to come back. It's like, nah, I'm done for the day. I'm gone.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. Whereas on a ship, your boss knows where you sleep. Your boss knows where you go for a shit. Your boss knows where you go and collect your mail. Your boss knows where your mates hang out. He knows where your best mate is. He'll go find him. He knows where he eats and where he goes for a shit. So on a submarine, it's totally different lifestyle, totally different Navy. It's like one or the other, totally different.
Yeah, no, it's a life that you gotta, it's crazy, man. You gotta like it, and you gotta be able to live it, you know, because it's you gotta be resilient on that. Now, when you talked a little bit about your story, by the way, I think almost probably 80% of people that start with watches go through the fossil part. So it's not an issue. Yeah. You know?
I think it's either you get handed down a really good watch, and then you're kind of struck by that bolt of lightning and of, wow, that's a cool Rolex. Like, how do I get one of these myself? Yeah. Or it starts with just the simplest thing and appreciating a watch for what it is. And that's how it started for me.
Yeah. No, and, you know, I think a lot of times it's like, you know, for us, you got the stores on bases, and they sell always the same brands, at least on the store itself. So a lot of times people get tired of that. They will go to the mall, and then what's there? Fossil, you know? So they'll buy a Fossil, you know?
Somebody who doesn't know much about watches, and they see it, they think, ah, that's cool. It's got a steel bracelet, and it's got numbers on the dial, and it makes me look like a pilot. Sounds great.
Yeah, and they think, you know, it's a store about watches in the mall. It has to be good. It's dedicated to watches, you know. So
And then you get to our stage where you won't buy a certain watch unless it was worn by a Navy SEAL who spent like 5 years in Afghanistan and brought it back and covered in blood, and like, I want that on a fabric strap. And it's just like, mate, calm down. It's just a watch.
Exactly. But you know, when you look back at like your time in as a submariner, what was the watches? What watches do you see the most? What are the most common watches in that world?
Yeah. So as I said before, this is something that I've spoken at length about on Recon Team Watch Blog, and I encourage anybody listeners who's not already heard of it to go over there and read it. We've got some great contributors coming as well, and it's come from all sides of the globe now, so it's really rich with information and backstories. But there are some very significant watches that appear on board submarines, on Royal Navy submarines anyway, speaking from first-hand experience. The most common one, people might be very surprised to hear, and this is something that I mentioned in one of my articles, the Pulsar G10, which is a watch made by, Pulsar. So Pulsar is like a subsidiary of Seiko. I mean, even the movement is called an Epson, so it's not a printer, it's actually a watch. This was a watch that was produced in the early 2000s when CWC lost the contract to manufacture a kind of G10 kind of watch for the British military. And this watch was produced in very large numbers. It was heavily involved in the Iraq and Afghan war. And Prince Harry even wore one on board his Apache when he was in Afghanistan. And these watches were doled out in great numbers to Trafalgar class submarines. So these were the oldest submarines that performed most of the tasks in the kind of 80s and 90s during the Cold War. A lot of these submariners wore these watches when they came out in the early 2000s. These submarines did their task. And these watches weren't owned by the submariners on board the submarine. They were actually owned by the submarine itself.
Okay.
These watches were under a kind of like an equipment register, in want for a better term.
Got it.
And these watches were, especially on speaking from my experience on V-boats, on Vanguard class submarines, these watches were given to one crew, and then this one crew used them. And then after their period of, say, a year with the submarine, they'd be handed over to the next crew. And this crew literally took the watch off the wrist and handed it to the next submariner, taking the submarine ready to go to sea. So these watches have done maybe 10 patrols, maybe more, before they fall to bits or go missing.
And I did air
quotes.
Air quotes, yeah.
Because it's the only way to get one unless they're on the surplus market, and they are.
Yeah.
But they're basically just, if you've ever seen a CWC G10, they look more or less exactly the same. They're just a lot flatter, and they're a lot more simplified. They have a traditional 24-hour dial, a quartz watch on a 20-millimeter grey, what we call a pusser strap. So that's that frigate grey colour strap that the British MOD and military have on all their issue watches. And yeah, it's such a popular watch on board submarines, mainly because they're seen as like the hardcore old school watch. There's that one, which is something, one of the watches I don't actually have, because the only way to get one is either to lose one or go on eBay and buy one secondhand. It's just not one of those watches I've got around to getting hold of yet.
Exactly.
The big one, though, the biggest one of all, would be the CWC SBS Quartz. This is a watch that everybody knows about these days, and it's very popular. But the CWC SBS Quartz has its origins within the submarine service, simply because it was issued to submarines for a while, but then it was deemed as kind of not necessary for submarine crews. But they made their way around enough to become a staple of submariners. So if you're wearing a CWC SBS Quartz, the question now is like, where did you get that? Like, who do you know who got you that? People do still get issued them, especially senior ranks, coxswains. So that's like, you know, the coxswain or something. So like the law guy, the guy who runs the crew, runs everybody basically. I don't know what the US Navy equivalent is. It might be the same. But the coxswain will have one, the XO will have one, and the captain might even have one. The chiefs, as the senior chiefs of all the departments, will have one as well. And they're a very popular watch, and they're the sign of a kind of a submariner who knows his watches. Like, that's a cool watch. But the watch itself had its origins, obviously, with the SAS and the SBS.
Yeah.
In the 1980s and 1990s, predominantly, when it was issued. They're still around today. They're still being used. But I do understand that Elliot Brown are starting to come in now and kind of take that role away from CWC, and it's kind of moving on into this automatic Elliot Brown Holton Professional, which is another one on my list. But yeah, the CWC SBS, massively popular on board submarines. You see a guy on radar, you see a guy on sonar, on the comms systems, they'll be wearing one, and it'll be on its gray pusser's MOD strap. And people will put them over dry suits when they're on the casing and stuff like that when we're going in and out of harbour. And yeah, they're a watch that's popular, and it's synonymous of the submariner, because it's just been used on that many operations and it's been seen on that many units now, that it's one of those watches that now has an identity within the Royal Navy Submarine Service. The Royal Marines also use it a lot as well. It's used in the case of the Royal Marines as a field watch. But these days, the latest generation of Marines kind of lean towards stuff like the Garmin and the Suntos, stuff that they can track their phys, and they can do that. But the old school guys, they still use them. And another watch, surprisingly, I mean, I've already mentioned Elliot Brown, which is one. The Elliot Brown Camford RNSS, which is the Royal Navy Submarine Service Camford, that made by Elliot Brown, the being a quite a small watch manufacturer, but very, very good, making some really, really cool, high quality timepieces these days. They now produce the Holton Professional, which is the watch that I believe is now being issued to the SBS and SAS in England, in the UK, because CWC are kind of, I don't know if they've lost the contract, but there's less of them in the bazaars now, and this new watch is starting to come through, the Holton Professional, which is a watch I'm really excited about. But their first watch was called the Camford, and it's a silver kind of large 44mm internal bezel 200-meter dive watch. And I've actually got it here, so I'll show Alex. You won't be able to see this, listeners, but it has the dolphins on the dial.
Yep.
Sword hands, 1293, and it just has presence and a loomed Elliot Brown logo on the clasp as well. So this watch was created in 2018 for a kind of special edition for submariners. So if you were a qualified submariner, and I should explain, to get your dolphins, you have to go on board a submarine and crawl around the belly of the submarine and learn where all the safety critical valves are in all the compartments, so that no matter where you find yourself on the submarine, you can keep that submarine safe. And you have to pass a board and complete a task book to say that you're safe and you know this before you can become a qualified submariner and get your dolphins. So to get that watch, you have to have dolphins first.
Got it. So
this is very much a watch that lives within a small community and a small historical kind of group, which is the Royal Navy Submarine Service. So that was produced. That's seen in a heavy amount of numbers on board submarines. You can go on every single unit and somebody will be wearing one. And people do take them on deployments and they take them to sea, because for a lot of people, it's the service watch. On the back of mine, it's got the my service number and my surname on the back. So it's something that people can carry away from their service when they do move on. And they can look at it and say, yeah, I am a submariner. And especially people who appreciate watches, they think, like that is one of a few, and it sums up my service. And the final one that I will mention, I was going to mention before I mentioned the Camford, the Vostok Amphibia.
Oh, really?
There's a lot on Royal Navy submarines. Yeah, there's a lot of people might be surprised to hear that. When you think about it, a 200-meter or more capable Russian dive watch that you can get on eBay between £75 to £120. Just makes sense, doesn't it? Especially when they're so replaceable. I mean, they have the history and the lineage as well. So obviously this is a watch that's been used heavily by Russian submariners. And especially the ones with the Russian submarine on the dial and the Red Star, they're very popular. So that one features a lot. They find themselves on fabric straps mostly. So what a lot of people will do on the 20mm cases is they'll actually take the gray MOD NATO straps, which you can get issued as a single item, and they will actually put them on Vostok Amphibias and wear them on submarines. So that's something that does happen. I have seen that happen. But yeah, I've taken a couple of them on patrols as well, Vostok Amphibias, and they just last forever. The bezel can fall off. You can scuff them on bulkheads and dip them in machine oil, and they'll just carry on working. And the gasket on the back just means that it's resistant to pressure more than, you know, I believe it's more than 200 meters water resistant. It could be water resistant to much more because of the design. So the fact that it's so cheap as well, and the fact that it is a Russian piece of kit, kind of carries irony that where the guys wearing it on board patrols and on patrols, like doing what we're doing, wearing Russian watches.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it does get appreciated, and you do see them quite a lot. Like, some of the new guys will come down and go, oh, I've got one of these Russian watches. And we're just like, yeah, we've seen that before.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're doing it too, though.
It is ironic. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. Definitely Vostok is one of those brands that it's not very famous or popular in the US military, I don't think in the U.S. culture as a whole, unless you're really into watches, even people that are into watches but not very much, don't have a lot of experience yet, they don't really know about Vostok Amphibia. So it's one of those brands that is kind of, you know, an outlier when it comes to the U.S. And Elliott Brown now, though, Elliott Brown is one that CWC is always been popular, but Elliott Brown is one that is growing fast.
It's getting fast. A hell of a reputation very, very quickly for the right for reasons as well, and with the right affiliations. And they are open to doing special projects with different organizations, either whether that be US or UK, any kind of military, that they're open to producing special editions for different units and different regiments and organizations anywhere, as long as there's a take up for it. So that they're a really open, connected organization within especially the British Armed Forces. And I've got a lot of friends through RISTA today from across the pond who are very interested in Elliott Brown, simply because, you know, it's the next generation of special forces watches, and it's actually out there doing it. And that is cool, because historically, looking at the CWC, SBS and stuff, and what it's done and where it's been, is fantastic, and it's great to appreciate that. But seeing the Elliott Brown now move off into the future and being this cutting-edge, crisp watch, you know, it just has the broad arrow on the dial, and it's just fantastic to see that. Yeah, really exciting.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, sometimes in the watch community, what happens is, you know, or the niche of military people in the watch community, what happens is a lot of times, you know, a brand becomes really famous outside the military niche, and it becomes famous as a whole in the watch community. And a lot of times people, the military side, starts to get discouraged about, well, now everyone has it. And, you know, now it's not a military thing only. And I think that CWC, because that attachment in the past to the SAS and the SBS and more on the special operations side, a lot of times military guys now are looking for a different option, something that is more attached to the military than no one else is going for. And Elliott Brown is just taking that space and filling it. And, you know, now that it has that, like you said, that legitimacy of having the contracts now with the military in the UK, you know, it's given even more legitimacy to it, and now everyone wants it in the military niche of what is the military community, the watch community. So it's exploding for sure. And I have, you know, what's funny is the US military, there is a couple of brands that people typically go to as a beginning, and lately you see a lot of people just like completely, they get an Elliott Brown and they're like, why would anyone even go back to those brands that, you know, I'll just keep an Elliott Brown. So
Beatles all over again.
Yeah, exactly. and that's how it happens, you know. But the concept, you know, the concept of getting, like you were saying, a watch that you have to earn in order, like you got to get the dolphins in order to get that watch, right? It's pretty cool, because, you know, Sangin does that with special operations. They will add a green vessel to special operations personnel when they get a watch, because in the US, you know, they wear the green beret. So because it's the green beret for us, for special forces, special operations soldiers, they will give, they will put the green vessel for people that provides that certificate saying, hey, I did graduate it. And then they'll put that in there. Yeah. So it's cool. That concept to me is really cool, because it gives even more uniqueness, right? Those are, our brands are very entrenched in the military culture. And now they're creating even a subculture to that.
That's right.
To give that. And
you've got these really heavyweight brands that have always been around. And then that idea of that that watch having lineage and having history, and that's been supercharged with personal identity and accomplishment. And these watches, I don't think I'll ever sell that Camford. I don't think I could. And you know, I just wouldn't put my name on it, and I couldn't sell it.
Yeah,
and that takes away from, oh, I got this really cool service watch, and it came with me on this occasion. And I got it issued, or I bought it. But that watch being only there because you accomplished something brings an entirely different dynamic into a watch. And that's something that I really do believe adds value to a watch, even in terms of the secondhand market as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's only there because somebody is able to qualify for it. And that gives it a history that it's going to carry with it forever. And that's fantastic.
I'll tell you what. I guarantee you it increases value because those guys, they're desk divers that work in finance in New York, and they want to buy a watch to say that they got a cool watch, even though they will never even wash their hands with it. Yeah. They'll pay a lot of money for it, I guarantee you, because those guys, those bastards will buy it for sure.
Yeah, they will. Thousands of dollars that year just to look like they've been near a submarine.
You know? Exactly. They'll put it on and they'll be like, you see all of this? This is history. Yeah, you never seen the water without watching your wrist. So,
and that's what makes them so special. I mean, I'm not going to even try and retract from the history and lineage of the Rolex Submariner. I mean,
it's
a fantastic watch. It's solid. It does absolutely everything.
Yeah.
You can wear it to your kid's birthday party, or you can wear it at battle stations on a submarine on patrol somewhere, and it will perform exactly the same. And it has done for many, many generations. But there are some things that you cannot buy with money. And that is what adds value to watches to me in terms of my collection. And all my watches transcend to an experience, or they transcend to an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes watches valuable to me, and it also stops them from selling them.
I agree. You know, I think that the best watches, regardless of price, is the watch that has a story attached to it or an idea attached to it, like you were saying, right? Mm-hmm. And those watches are going to give you more. So this is something I heard from someone on the Wrist Cheese Radio podcast. I can't remember his name, so I can't give him credit. So I'm sorry if he listens. But he said watches that give you the amount of smiles that per dollar, right? Mm. So you can have a watch that costs 10 grand, and you can have a watch that costs $500. And the watch that costs $500 might give you more smiles per amount of dollar because it has an idea or has an experience attached to it. Mm. That watch is more valuable to that person and to you than the $10,000 watch. Absolutely. Because it's just what is attached to it. And, you know, it's something that I was talking before. It's, you know, nowadays, the engineering and the amount of things that we do better than before when it comes to making watches, you know, a lot of watches are really good. The brand recognition, the finishing on it adds value, monetary value to it, and so on and so on. But at the end of the day, watches are so capable right now that in reality, what makes it more valuable to each person is those stories that you attach to it.
That's right.
If it doesn't have that because you left it on a safe the whole time, the only value attached to it is brand recognition and how the brand behaves at that moment. And to me, that's just not interesting.
It only goes so far. Goes so far as to your personal experience of a watch.
Exactly.
Your personal experience of a watch relates to something that you've either done with it or it means something to you personally, which is why you have it.
Oh yeah,
and that's 100%. Way more important than splashing, you know, $10,000 on a watch and then taking it out there and trying to get that same kind of feeling. You might get that magic. You might do. It might be a Braille watch.
Yeah.
But in terms of buying something and expecting something out of it for that amount of money, it doesn't always happen. It doesn't.
Yeah. No, not at all. Yeah. And you know, and there is people out there that buy those watches and put experiences on them. You know, so that's even better. I think that when people ask me about, you know, what watch should I buy? What watch is better? And, you know, aesthetically, I tell people aesthetically, There is no one that can tell you that because it's your likes. What I like is not what you like.
Yeah. I get that before. Like, what watch looks the best? Like,
yeah.
You answer that.
Yeah, exactly.
You do you want do you want 50 odd millimeter or do you want 38? You tell me. Like, I hate that question.
Yeah.
I mean, what are the watches that I enjoy wearing the most? And I'll actually mention this because we're talking about the subject of watches having a meaning. One of the watches I actually enjoy wearing the most for meaning per pound is the Hamilton Murph.
Yeah.
So this
was a great watch.
Yeah. First of all, it is a fantastic watch. It's really well made. It has a beautiful finish. And for all the fans of the Interstellar movie, it does look exactly the way it does on screen.
Yeah.
And it is fantastic. The only issue of mine, it was on the leather strap that came with it. That started to go pretty soon after a couple of months. I'm not a fan of leather straps. That has changed slightly recently in terms of like leather NATOs and stuff like that. But I put this on a Hirsch performance strap, which is a kind of blend of leather and rubber underneath. So it's kind of like on a rubber strap, and I've retained the original clasp. So for all the purposes and intents of everybody's image of mind right now, this Murph looks exactly like the photos of the Murph. Like it looks like in your head right now, that's how it looks.
And that one is the 42 or the 38?
That's the 42. So the 42 has the inscription on the second hand of Eureka from the movie, if anybody's seen it. If you've not seen it, it's been out for 9 years, catch up. The reason I have it is because one of the experiences that I often talk to friends and family about and people out there when they ask, what is it like being a submariner? And the biggest thing for me, especially living in that environment for a long amount of time, is time. It's the passage of time. So submarines operate 6 hours on, 6 hours off. So each day you have to wake up twice. So you have to wake up in the middle of the night if you're on second watch out, and you have to wake up just before lunchtime. And first watch, it's first thing in the morning and then first thing at night. So there's two get-ups. So whether your mind can process waking up twice in one day, and if you're the kind of person that sleeps with a watch on, I am when I'm at sea. The first thing I do when I wake up is check the time.
Yeah.
And in that time that I've been asleep, my friends and family have gone to work, they've eaten meals, they've gone seeing friends and family, they might have gone out to see stuff, they might have gone to a concert, they might have gone for a drive, they might have gone for a walk and a hike in the hills or whatever, and they're doing something that I have no concept of understanding what it is that's happening. And something else that happens on submarines, actually, the only communications that we actually get are very small pieces of paper, and these small pieces of paper are either 60 words long or 120 words long. You can get 60 words twice a week, 120 words once a week, and it comes as a strip, and that's all you get. The only contact you get from your friends and family once a week or twice a week, and that's all, your only concept of the outside world, because I mean that's up to your own head to process exactly what that information means. And that information could have gone through several different people before it's got to you for security reasons. So you take that information and it's like nectar. So that's your understanding of the outside world. And also with that is you're reading this news maybe a month, maybe weeks after that's happened.
Yeah, exactly.
So you remember the movie Interstellar where Matthew McConaughey has been down to the planet where the time on that planet is way, way faster than it is on Earth. And he realizes that every single mistake he makes adds time on to his time down there. And the older his daughter's going to get and the more life he's going to miss. And then he gets back on the ship and he watches those videos and he realizes how much he has missed of his children's lives. And that is the same in many ways as being on a submarine on a patrol as long as that, because in that time you have missed your children going to school. You have missed your friends' weddings, the funerals. You might have relatives that have died that you don't know about yet until you get back. And all that has happened whilst you were doing something else, while your concept of time was totally different than the people back home. So the film resonated with me because of that, because the concept, that music in your head, you can hear the time passing by and it's like a slow but steady pace. And when I saw the Murph, I just knew it was a watch I had to have, because I literally could watch that second hand go around and realize that not only is time fucking precious, it's also incredibly important to life itself. And that is why I have the Murph. So a Rolex Submariner can keep time the same as that watch, but it cannot represent to me what that watch means. So that is what I talk about when I talk about what the Murph kind of means.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that's the kind of stories, right, that to me, when I made the podcast, that's the kind of story that I want to put out, right? Because the story of, you know, I'm famous, I make a lot of money, and I bought this, my first watch ever was this 20 grand watch that no one else can get. And yeah, it was pretty humble because my next one was 100 grand. That doesn't resonate with anyone. That doesn't resonate with anyone. It's a very small block of non-reality. And to me, it's like, that's the stories that you hear when you hear about watches. You read books about watches, and it's always a story of a famous chef who cooked for a race car driver in Rome or Italy in Monaco, and the driver, you know, had this watch, so he decided to have the same watch. It's some bullshit like that. And to me, it doesn't resonate with the rest of us. So when I made the podcast, I was like, you know, I want the stories of the guys that have some cool shit like that that no one else can understand, because it is a hard concept to understand, right? Like, it's a hard concept to understand. Like, man, you mean waking up twice a day and then you're reading this little, it's the same concept of the little videos that he got on the movie, right? Like this little breaks of history, the past a long time ago. And now you're building that in your head and it's up to you. So it's, you know, it is crazy. And that's concept attached to a watch is very valuable, you know?
That's very valuable. And looking at my collection now back home, having done all that and looking at that watch, you feel thankful that you have that understanding and your appreciation of your own time. So that I don't think I'll ever sell the Murph for that reason. And almost when they eventually stop making it, I know it probably will exponentially go up in value. But I will never sell it. I just couldn't do it. The one thing that we're alluding to in this conversation when we talk about value for money, when we talk about watches in experiences, and that is Seiko. This is a brand that I've been to speak to many different collectors all the way around the world, from different backgrounds, whether they're police officers, whether they're firefighters, they're pilots, they're anybody like in the field. Seiko has such a presence in the military world, watch world. Yeah. Over the top of things like Rolex Submariners and CWC SPSs. I mean, Watches of Espionage described it as the Toyota of watches. Nailed it with that comment. You can wear it. You can, just like a Rolex Submariner, you can wear it to a christening. You can wear it to a birthday. And then you can, the next day, it can stay on your wrist when you're rushing, speaking to all your family and getting back to base and thinking, shit, I've got to get my grip down the boat. I've got to be down there for 0800. I've got to crack on. That watch, you can just throw it on your wrist and forget about it, and it will keep pace with you, even when you're at sea. And Seikos will do that so well. I've taken my Seiko Arnie to sea. I've got the Paddy one. And it was fantastic. It just did everything. I mean, I even forgot that watch had a backlight until I remembered. Because the bunks are pitch black, and I remembered, oh, right, yeah, backlight. Unscrew it and press it down. And I have another watch, I have an SKX 009, which doesn't look like an SKX 009 because I've had it modded to kind of represent or look a little bit curved, the looks of the Kermit.
It's
a green ceramic bar on a black face, and I put it on a Jubilee because Jubilee is just comfortable, and with a nice shirt on a night out, it looks pretty Gucci with that Jubilee on. That watch came from a friend of mine who's now left the service. He used to wear that watch back aft in the engine room in the submarine. So it used to clang around off bulkheads, and it used to be dipped in engine oil, and he used to just like not care about it, and it was scuffed to hell when I traded. I think I traded a couple of G-Shocks for it because I was like, mate, have a watch that will survive what you're doing to your watch. And then he gave me the SKX back, and then I was like, right, what can I do with this? So I had it modded. I think the only parts I retained was the movement and the case, and then between new OEM parts and a new bezel. Yeah, it's now that, and I wear it, not just wear it to work, I wear it at home, I wear it all the time, and it's one of the best watches I own because it's just so practical, it's just so damn useful. And that's what Seiko is all about. It's in the background, it's keeping up with you, and it's history. I mean, like the Navy SEALs using the Turtle, or every other organization, Special Forces using the Turtle. I've got a Turtle on the way as well, that's currently with Seiko being serviced, and I purposely went out on eBay and bought one that had been fucked up. I wanted one that had history. Because I mean, not only was it cheaper, but I looked at it and I thought, well, that watch has been somewhere. That watch has done something, and it deserves to have that history. So I'm going to take that on, and I'm going to carry it with me, and I'm going to take it one step further. And I said that more than anything else, a Turtle should do that, because it is that watch that does that. It carries its scars and it tells a story. So Seiko is another fantastic brand, infinitely interesting. The Seiko mil subs are starting to become more and more popular, and that's for all reasons. I've seen a lot of those recently. They're on fire. And there are plenty of great modders out there, and great sources you can get those from all different areas. Loads of choice.
That's a brand that is definitely embedded in the military, because it's like the Turtle, 100% everywhere. And for us in the US, in our base stores, our PXs, they're always there.
We had PXs. Yeah. Oh, God.
They're always there. And the crazy thing is, they'll have them on store, and they'll have them on online. And they'll put some sales, like sometimes you think, so they're selling it like $80 less. And then next thing you know, they'll put a sale and the watch is like a quarter of the regular price. And it's insane. It's crazy. That's fantastic. And they're always there. And big selection too. So a lot of people, when they're first getting into watches in the military, a lot of them go to the PX and they'll see these watches, and that's what they'll get. They'll get a Seiko because they keep hearing Seiko is good. So they'll get a Seiko. And then you see a lot of Seikos on military bases in the US because that's of fantastic. That. It's always there. Really? Great prices. It's crazy. And they'll have the Patty versions. They'll have the regular versions. It's one of those watches that's very popular. So it's a lot of history, and Seiko has a lot of history, a lot of good history. It's great watches. I mean, I was talking to Sulu Time podcast, and one of the things that we were talking about is when Teddy Baldassare made the video, and Ben was going down to dive with the Seiko 5 GMT.
Yeah, I saw
push pull crown,
and it was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Push pull crown, 100 meters of water resistance. He's diving in it, and you'll see him diving, and he's holding it so that the camera can see it. I'm like, it's sticking perfectly fine. So you know, to me, it's like
versatile, so versatile. Yeah,
very versatile.
And I love that. It's what it should be. You should be able to spend money on a watch that will work and keep up with you. Yeah, and there are plenty of watches you can go out there. You can go on AliExpress and buy a watch that looks just like the watch that you want.
Yeah.
But it might not perform exactly the way you want. But you can spend half, you can spend a little bit more, and you can spend half a lot less than the actual watch that you want.
Yeah.
You can buy a watch that will work, and you'll enjoy owning it because it has a history and it has a lineage.
Yeah.
And that is really important.
Yeah, one of the things that I see a lot is a lot of people, you know, like actually when I got to this unit that I'm in right now, there is a guy where I work, the office that I work, that he's into watches too. And he owns Rolexes that his father-in-law passed down to him years ago. And they're pretty recent Rolexes. They're not vintage. They're probably from, I think one of them, the Submariner that he has is probably 2014. Mm-hmm. So it was before the price went crazy.
Yeah.
But he got it, and he has a Hoyer. He has a Breitling. Mm. And but those watches, he when I got here, he never wore them to work.
Mm.
And he always wore a Seiko.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I have a strange relationship with Breitling in the same
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
I used to have a Super Ocean 44, and I think that was my first big boy watch, and I didn't gel with it. I didn't take to it. I don't know whether that's personal preference or what, but Breitling is a very new money watch. It's one of those watches where it's a good stepping stone from Seiko, up to Rolex. I totally agree why you would invest in a Submariner.
Yeah, I mean he wears his Seiko. He used to wear his Seiko all the time, but never the other watches. So I told him. He asked me one time, I was wearing my Seamaster, and he was like, you wear that to work? I was like, I wear any watch I have to work.
This is an epiphany I have recently had. Yeah. Right?
I was like, I wore the watches all the time regardless.
Every single watch that you own, I don't care if your job is digging graves.
Yeah.
Wear the watch that you own.
Yeah.
Because they are tools.
Yeah.
And if you scuff them on a brick wall, like I did a while ago, taking the bins out, taking the trash out, it's fine because it's what they're made for. And it's steel and it will gain character as it gets marks on it. And every watch that you own, you will be thankful for the fact that it's got a history. It will be yours. Yeah. It won't just look like the catalog one. Or the one that you've seen on Instagram, you'll think, shit, it'll gain its own personality. And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's how these watches are meant to function. They're not meant to stay perfect forever.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because the story that he told me, how he got the Rolex was, my father-in-law, we were in Hawaii on vacation. He bought it. And then, towards the end of the vacation, he just gave it to me. And I was like, that's a cool story. But right now, the only story you have with that Rolex is that.
Mm.
Everything else is with your Seiko. Mm-hmm. So every story that you're going to say is with your Seiko.
So you which is the one nothing, that you have more affinity for?
Nothing attached with that Rolex.
Yeah.
Wear the Rolex. Enjoy it. Because right now you work in an office anyway. But enjoy that watch. Mm. Have stories with that watch. So you can start with the story of how you got that watch and then continue telling stories about how that grew with you.
There was a senior engineer on board another submarine that I was told this story, and I later found out to be true because I saw the guy wearing this watch on his wrist, and he'd been down the boat for hours and hours fixing this mechanical problem to do with the sewage system, no less, and he was fixing pipework, and he'd been down there for hours fixing the pump and all sorts. He was literally like wrist deep in it, trying to get that system fixed. And he was down there, he was wearing his boots, no t-shirt underneath his overalls, it was Velcro like up almost to his belly button. He was dripping in sweat. He was like, I'm gonna get this done, I'm gonna fucking fix this thing.
Yeah.
And he just looked like he just crawled out of Shrek swamp. He was disgusting. And he was screwing with his hands, like getting around this piece of pipework with the wrench. And on his wrist was a Rolex Submariner Hulk.
Nice.
And he wore that every single day. And he wore it down the boat and he took it to sea. And doing that job, he could get any job when he comes out of the service. He could go and have a really easy time. And he will look at that watch and go, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember when I was deep in little shit.
Now it's clean. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just never forget shit like that. It's just, exactly. So these watches, I know they're pretty. I know they're worth money.
Yeah.
But when you can't take it with you at the end of the day. Yeah, you get to the end of your service, you get to the end of your days, and you sat there in your chair. Are you going to want a shiny watch that looks exactly like it did when it came out of the box? And you think, good thing I didn't wear that because it would have got scratched. Or do you want a watch where you look at the bezel, you see that ding, and you think, oh, I remember that because that was the time I was fixing the shit pump down there. And it took me out. That's exactly what you want owning a watch like that. Another watch that's quite popular that most people might be surprised to hear, especially in senior ranks, is the Amiga Seamaster No Time to Die.
Oh, really?
I've seen a lot of warrants and a lot of warrant officers and a lot of senior chiefs wearing them. It's like the third or fourth time I've been down a boat and seen one. So they're also very popular. But again, worn with uniform, down the boat, doing a job, 9 to 5. It's there. It's doing it. And I think that was purchased because of the whole, you know, James Bond was a Submariner Royal Navy commander thing, and I think I'm a bit of that, or I want my wife to think I'm a bit of that. So that's where it came from.
Yeah, exactly.
Do that, and then when you scuff it on the bulkhead trying to leave early, you'll remember it, and then it will be yours. It's fantastic.
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure. You know, I think that's definitely something that, I talk about it all the time. And it's one of those things that I can't get around with understanding. You know, it's I get it. You know, like the first scratch hurts, but from there on, it's okay.
My first experience of that was with an Invicta Pro Diver.
Yeah.
That was the first automatic watch I ever bought. It was an 8926 OV, and that was the first reference number I ever remembered when I remembered the watch. And it was a great little watch. I don't have it anymore. I sold it on to a guy, I think he was in the Romanian military, and he was looking for a watch to take in the field. I was like, mate, take my Invicta. You know, NH35A, do everything you want. It's been through hell, take it. And he's probably out there doing something even more mental than it was before. I had an office job before I joined the Navy. I had the most boring, mundane office job anybody could ever ask for, which was entering gas meter readings into a computer system.
Oh, wow.
In a Lancashire mill town in an office. Now, I know that sounds dystopian as fuck, and that's because it is. And I was leaving the office, and I was going around the door, and I hadn't owned it for any longer than 2 or 3 months, and I scuffed it on the railing as I left the door. And it scuffed the steel, the black on the steel bezel. And I was just like, no. But then years later, when I was on patrol on the submarine, and then we kind of get the messages that we get, like, oh, this is coming. Oh, we've got to do this. And yep, we're going to be awake so many more hours than we wanted to be. And you're the only guy that can do it. And then you just look at the same watch and go, oh, right, yeah, that's how it works. It's not as bad. Yeah, I get it now. It's like, the watches tell a story. That's the
main. That's for sure. So you talked about contributing with Recon Team Watch Blog, and then you talked about, you know, you're transitioning in your Navy job right now, so. What's next for you, man? You're going to transition. You're going to continue to contribute with Recon Team Watch Blog. What's next for you?
So my journey with watches follows whatever it is I do in my day-to-day job. So I can't actually say for security reasons exactly where it is I'm going, but it's interesting, and it allows me to meet a lot more new people and explore some new places. So my watches will follow me on that journey.
Nice.
And I will do that. I will continue to write for Recon Team Watch Blog for as long as Justin is enthusiastic about bringing all kinds of different people of all kinds of different backgrounds together to talk about these great watches. And that's what it's all about. Some people, some organizations and brands are in it to produce really good products for the community, and they're there to make money, they're there to run a business. Some people are there to appreciate the watches because they're the ones that have taken them into the field. They're the ones that have taken them onto deployment where it's been them and the watch at times, and they have a real appreciation. And there's other like-minded guys out there that are much like that, that appreciate it. And that's what it's about, is linking all these experiences together, because we are way richer in this interest and this hobby in sharing these experiences and understanding how it's different for every person. Different watches as well that do these jobs, and that's where the interest comes from. I have quite a keen history interest in the watches that were used during the Vietnam War, and mainly, and I'll bring another one out for you, Alex. The this one is one of my favorites at the moment, the Timex Mark One Camper. This is nice. the reissue made by Timex recently. I think it's like a reissue of the 80s model, but it is very, it's almost identical to the plastic issue mil-spec watch that was issued to soldiers during the Vietnam War. Now, a lot of people who were issued these watches came from poor working class backgrounds in many cities and towns in America. And for many young men who were drafted to Vietnam, that was the first watch that they were ever given, that they potentially that they ever owned. And a lot of that's why these, what I mean, even like MacGyver had one because he brought his back. And that's what the it is with these. They are watches that were given to somebody who didn't have a watch, and then they took it through hell, and then they brought it home, and then it meant something to them. So again, that same theme continues, but these watches that are still made today, like the Glycine Airman for pilots, that one for infantry, the Timex Camper and the Benrus one as well, and also the Tornet Ravel Diver as well, stuff like that for the Navy SEALs, stuff like that's infinitely interesting to me. So I've recently picked up a Hamilton Khaki Fields as well, which is a watch I'm wearing today.
Nice.
That's a watch I've wanted for absolutely ages, and I finally got one. Again, a watch that came from the same lineage and the same history. And it is a fantastic field watch.
Yeah.
Small, undercuff, very, very lightweight, mechanical, but you wind it and it'll go for like 2 days at a time.
Mine, nice.
It's really, really good. The power reserve is really good on it. And you don't have to think about it. And then that experience of winding a watch, that's something that I haven't quite experienced for a long time. That mechanical feel for your fingers, like you're giving it life. You're preparing it to follow you for the next few days, and that's something I've enjoyed owning.
Nice.
Predominantly my interest in watches is dive watches, military dive watches especially. That they count for more than anything else in my collection at the minute. But I'm slowly moving into field watches. I've never really gelled with chronographs. Can't really understand why. I've tried them so many times. Maybe if I invested in a Seiko Panda, maybe that might change my mind. But it's definitely not number one on my list at the minute. But that's the kind of direction that I'm moving in. Always advancing the interest, always broadening the horizons with people that are interested in it with me. And I will continue sharing and continue my stories of my watches and everybody else's watches for as long as I possibly can.
Perfect, man. That sounds pretty cool, man, to be able to, you know, continue to experience life with those watches in the military as a submariner, and then be able to have an outlet to write about it and tell those stories. That's pretty cool.
It is difficult to write about at times, because there is some things that you cannot talk about. And there are things that you can't even go into detail with. But what you can talk about is the times where you've seen guys wearing these watches that you see on in these situations and during these patrols and events.
Yeah.
And they are out there and they are doing the job. Even as we speak, there are CWC SBS divers that are on Vanguard class submarines. And you can guarantee that the guy wearing it is going to bed next to a nuclear missile.
Yeah.
And he's going to wear that watch when he comes alongside, but when he comes back home as well. So those watches are out there and they are doing exactly what people are hoping they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's the same for Elliot Brown. I'm sure Elliot Brown will be very pleased to hear that his babies are out there on the wrists of guys doing the job, serving the time, and being their timekeeper. They are out there doing it.
Yeah, for sure. No, for sure. So is there do you have a watch that you consider is your grail?
I was hoping you'd ask
looking
me that.
For sure.
I was going to ask you that. I do. In fact, I have like one and a half at the moment. I have, because as we've spoken, we have like a realistic one and a grail. So there's a grail and that's still a grail, but I would still have it kind of thing. So my grail watch, the official answer, is the Omega Seamaster 300M. In blue with the wave dial. That is my grail watch. It's a watch that also appears on submarines. My ex-commanding officer had one, and it's a watch that is synonymous with, you know, special forces, everything. especially the Navy. And a lot of officers that I have been friends with over the years have owned them. And it's just left an impression on me. I mean, I was the generation of the Pierce Brosnan Bond with the watch from GoldenEye, and that will forever be my first interaction with James Bond, and that watch, the laser, and squaring the floor, even on the N64 game, using it as a really weak weapon to do people with a multiplayer. You know, it's a watch that will mean all that to me forever. So my long-term goal is to get one of those before they go up any more in price, which they are.
Yeah,
they are going with inflation. Is to grab one of those, and I'm going to take it to sea with me. However, my kind of half grail—it's still a grail. It's unfair to call it a half grail. Is the Seiko Willard?
Another one.
So that watch is like the king all holy Seiko dive watch is the Willard, because I mean it's all about Apocalypse Now. It's all about the 1960s, 1970s special forces divers. I mean, you know, Martin Sheen in the movies, even wearing tiger stripe, wearing a Seiko. It's just like, can't he get any better than that? And they reissued it. And yeah, I'm seriously considering picking one of those up eventually as well, because they are just a fantastic watch. Well, the Seamaster will do everything you expect it to, but so will the Willard. And the Willard is like, you know, one fifth of the price of the Seamaster at the moment. So it is a fantastic watch, and that is something that that's another watch that I would add to my collection, knowing that it wouldn't be going anywhere. And I would enjoy, if anything, wearing that Willard to sea with me more than a Seamaster, because it's got history and it's getting more history with me. So I would enjoy that just as much.
I don't know if you heard of DC Vintage Watches?
I have, yeah. I've seen.
Yeah, so he was in one of my episodes, and I love it, because it, like, for vintage Seikos, like, he's a great source, man, because, you know, there's a lot of Fakos out there. That...
yeah, absolutely. I've nearly been tripped up by a couple of them. They're on eBay. They're out there.
They're out there for sure.
Of your budget, they are looking. They are out there, so be careful.
For me, you know, for me, it's hard because I don't really have a grail watch that exists right now, right?
That surprises me.
Yeah. So for me, I want a Grand Seiko diver that is not 48 millimeters, right? I want a Grand Seiko diver that is 40 millimeters. And if, you know, for me, that's my grail. And I think I don't know if it will ever happen, but I know they're coming down in sizes. The Evolution 9, the last Evolution 9 diver, the blue and black that they did with the wave pattern that they do, is 42 point something, I think, which is equivalent to what a Seamaster is.
It's getting
It's getting smaller, but also because those Evolution 9 ones are the ones with the pattern that they do on the dial, that's also 11 grand. So it's not the same as the typical Grand Seiko diver that is still 6 to 7 grand, right? So there's a difference. The typical ones are more like the your Seamaster pricing, It's one of those things, right? I don't know. But for me, that will be my grail. That will be the one that I want. I do own a Grand Seiko right now, but it's the GMT quartz. And to me, it's like it's the feeling of Grand Seiko is amazing. But that will be my grail watch, you know, and it doesn't exist right now. So I think that for me, it's good.
I think it's good. Let's hope though, because I think the time of big watches is coming to an end. I think it's pretty safe to say that trend is now kind of fading away. I remember 10 years ago, we were looking at Hublot Big Bangs and Rolex Deep Seas. They were the really popular stuff. But now, these days, it tends to be the smaller ones. The smaller ones attract more attention because they're more wearable. They're more comfortable.
I would say, you know, in my collection, majority of my watches right now are 39 millimeters, 39 and a half.
Mm. And that's a good size.
No, I love it. You know, I love anything between 39 to 41. That's my preferred sizes. Mm-hmm. But also lug to lug has an impact, you know, like Seiko, you can go higher because lug to lug is so short. Mm-hmm. So you tend to be able to go higher in sizes. And ultimately, you know, like some people don't care. So if you don't care, you wear whatever the hell you want. It doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. But, yeah. You know, to me, I experimented a lot with a little bit bigger sizes before. I want to go down in sizes now. So it's just how everything moves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things. And honestly, I just lately I've been in this thing where my excitement for watches is more in the smaller brands than it is in the bigger names brands, right? My excitement for watches, I see a lot of really cool stuff happening in the lower end or smaller brands than in bigger brands, because bigger brands are playing as safer.
I think the smaller brands are more in touch with the real world right now, and the guys that are doing the jobs. That is a good thing that can be said about Elliot Brown right now. They're a really good example of that. The smaller brands are the ones that are able to come down to the guys in the field and come down to the guys doing the jobs, through platforms like Instagram, and have that conversation with them and get that insight. The bigger brands, I think a lot of them are sticking to tradition these days because they know what works and they stick to their heritage.
Yeah.
And they stick to the stuff that they know that people will want, and they'll say, "Oh, well, I want a Submariner. I want a Daytona." Those people know what they want.
Yeah.
The other people, you know, looking at Sangin and stuff like that, they're the ones that look at the smaller brands and think, "Yeah, that's really cool because I resonate with that." And that's what they do really well. One thing I wanted to mention for you, one thing I know that kind of hovers around your kind of grail, the Seiko 62 Mass has recently been reissued in 38mm.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fantastic
idea. Yeah, yeah.
I've actually got there was a period of time in my collection where I had quite a lot of homages. And these were watches that were, you know, from 10 years ago, it was impossible to find anything but say an Invicta Pro Diver with 200 meters water resistance and Seiko movement. Now there's loads of stuff. But I have a Seastern 62 Mass with a Sterling 20mm wrist compass on it at the moment. This is a watch that I've been featuring quite a lot on posts recently. I recently picked up the wrist compass. I'm actually showing it to Alex right now, by the way, for our listeners. This is on a 20mm Marine National. And the idea behind this watch is kind of to capture that kind of Vietnam Navy SEAL kind of 38mm dive watch feel that I've been looking for. And I've tried to get rid of this watch because it's a homage. I have tried to say it needs to be a Seiko. It should not be a Seastern. However, this is a really, really good watch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got AR coating, really, really nice ceramic bezel, and it's got a really, really nice case back on it, which has an even better finish and fit than a Seiko does, and it's a 35A, so it'll just never die, and 200 meters water resistance. It's just a fantastic watch, and at 38mm, it's so wearable, and it's so comfortable that it's out of the 20 or 30 so homages that I've gone through over the last 5 or 6 years, it's the only one that's managed to stick around simply because of its size. Because up until now, Seiko were not making a 38mm 62 Mass, but Seastern have been making that for a while. And anybody who's just getting started into the watch collecting addiction, shall we say, of their life, I would suggest going checking that out on AliExpress, because I picked up that one for little over £100. And it's performed so well, and it is a great foray into what Seiko can do, because it's a Seiko in disguise, really. Most of the watches are Seiko, and it is a fantastic watch. But yeah, watch sizes are coming down. And one thing I also will say, I've mentioned the Arnie in this conversation, this podcast, and I wanted to say to anybody who hasn't got an Arnie, and they won't get one because they think it's a big watch, it isn't. And I know that's a confusing statement because it doesn't wear like the size it is. It wears a lot more like a 40 millimeter or a 40 or a small 42 because of the lug to lug. It's a very practical watch. So that's another one I recommend. If you're going to start out in Seiko, if you're going to pick one up, pick up an Arnie. Because you'll be Arnold Schwarzenegger then. You'll go home and you'll go home to your partner or your girlfriend and you go, we're watching Predator tonight. Why? Because I've just bought this watch. And then that's what it can do for you. So I encourage you, if you haven't picked up Seiko yet, get an Arnie because they are great.
Well, that's a good closing argument right there. Get an Arnie, be like Arnold, and watch the Predator.
you will get a lot out of it, trust me.
Yeah, exactly. So, man, you know, we're gonna start closing out because we've been at it for an hour and 20 minutes, and I know you have some stuff to do. So,
We could go on. We could go on for ages.
Exactly.
We could make your phone battery die and everything. Look at that stuff forever.
You know, it's been a pleasure, man, to have you. Hopefully we can do it again. It was great stories about, you know, your life as a submariner and how watches fit in there and how connected your life as a submariner is to some of these watches. Great stories, man. So I appreciate you coming in. I know the listeners are going to enjoy it. And we will definitely do it again, man. So tell everyone how they can find you and
So I'm from my page Wrist of Today. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm on Threads now. Wrist of Today. And also if you check out Recon Team Watch Blog, they have their own website and I'm a contributor to their page. So I've spoken at length about some Mariner submarine culture and the watches. But there's so much more that I haven't covered in this conversation with me and Alex. It's also in the articles on Recon Team Watch Blog. So also go follow Justin over at Recon Team Watch Blog as well. And he's got loads of contributors from all over the world. He's just announced 4 new ones. So we're really getting some rich watch collecting juice in our blog now. So please go over there, have a look at those blogs, and please comment on any of the posts that I've spoken about. Every two or three posts that I make, in my posts, I talk about the watch at length and I talk about what it means to me or what the lineage of the watch. And I focus and I wrap that around my experiences in my own life and I wrap that around the watches themselves. So this is the interesting part of watch collecting and I'm here to explore it with you. So please check us out over at Wrist of Today. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, it's if you guys haven't checked it out, go to Recon Team Watch Blog. Great articles, great contributors. Justin is an amazing guy. Yeah. And then check Wrist of Today. Great page. He posts a lot about his watches. So check it out. And nice talking to you, man. We'll definitely do it again. And hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Next week, another cool subject that I've been building on for the last 2 weeks. So we'll talk about it and hopefully you guys enjoyed it and talk to you guys next. Bye.